Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Yoga, the ultimate body, mind, spirit guide. Namaste. This is Susanna Ron, your host for Yoga, the ultimate body, mind, spirit guide. I wish to thank Penny and Courtney and Body, Mind, Spirit Guide Radio for the opportunity to speak to an audience of like-minded individuals about a topic that is so near and dear to my heart. Those of you who know me will attest that I eat, drink, and sleep yoga, and I'm so fortunate to be able to share what I learn with anyone I meet. I'd also like to thank my listening audience in advance and welcome anyone who has questions to call 646-378-0378. Courtney is on hand to take your calls. So please, if you're interested in having a conversation, don't hesitate to pick up the phone. From 7:15 to 7:45, I will be having conversations with you, and as well as possibly an interview with a special guest. Hopefully, she'll be calling in. And at 7:45, I will be teaching a specific breath practice that will calm your mind and body and keep you relaxed yet alert. Over the next several months, I hope to help listeners understand what yoga is and how we can use the power of yoga to heal the body and mind and open our spirit to the healing power of the divine. I'll be bringing in guest experts who will be discussing ongoing research that they're involved in, as well as anything in the news regarding yoga research that will keep the listeners informed. In the coming weeks, I will be unfolding the science and philosophy behind yoga, discussing the Shad Darshan, the six philosophies, the oldest of which is the Samkhya philosophy, the oldest philosophy on the planet, which describes how consciousness evolved into man and how man can once again evolve back into consciousness. That philosophy was established somewhere about 5,000 BCE, and I will be discussing how that is pertinent to today in 2015. I will also discuss measured yoga therapy, the true yoga therapy, and the Yoga Therapy 2020 initiative. If you'd like to reach me after the show or any other time, you can call me at 248-507-4008 or contact me at www.yogatherapy-om.com. So I'd like to begin with my story and how I came to be where I was, where I am today, and where I was. So I'll start with where I am today. I am a yoga therapist. I have a bachelor's degree in exercise physiology from the University of Michigan. I was in the fitness field for 30-some years before I began my journey into yoga and yoga therapy. My background is in exercise science and anatomy and alignment, so that has always been a very big part of anything that I teach. I'm a very active person, and I came into yoga at the age of 48, even though I had been introduced to it when I was 12. My mother had the foresight to introduce me to Shivananda yoga, and I loved it because the first posture we did was a headstand, and I could stay in a headstand forever. I thought that was really great, but I was not so keen on the periods of rest in between the postures because my mind was very active, what we call the ajasic. So I did not pursue yoga at that time, although whatever I learned, I always used when I was stretching in between my other physical activities. So as a fitness person, I was teaching for many, many years. I taught pregnant. I taught on cement floors with poor shoes. I ended up compressing the discs of my spine. I had plantar fasciitis, Achilles tendonitis, shin splints. My kneecaps were tilted out, so when I bent my knees, I couldn't even bend them a few inches before it hurt. My sacroiliac joint was dislocated by a swimming accident. I was diving and fell off from the side of the pool, and it was dislocated in 1994. I have three herniated discs in my low back, three in my upper back. I was I had meningitis 6 or 7 times, in the hospital 3 times, and then I had an MS diagnosis. So basically all those years of fitness really did not bring me to health. In fact, I abused my body and ended up with all these injuries. So in 2001, I decided it was time to get back to yoga and the teaching of yoga. So I came to yoga with the idea of the fun of it, the physical. I love the choreography. I love to create fun and tricky and interesting choreography. That was where I came from. I had been, you know, and I had taught for so many years, everything I taught was choreographed. So I came into yoga with that perspective. And it was what my teacher taught me, because that's where he was coming from, the idea of the flow of vinyasa. And I thought this is what yoga was, until some of the postures that we had been doing were actually destabilizing my back and bringing out all my injuries. It was very, very, very uncomfortable and painful, so much so that I couldn't even turn over in bed. And I realized I needed to reach outside of my body of knowledge, and I sought help from a wonderful DO who put me in spinal traction for 6 weeks. I recovered from my pain, and my first class back, I ended up having the injury returned in an instant. So that's when I realized that there must be something that I'm not doing right, and I need to know more. And that's when I began my journey into yoga therapy. My first introduction came at the Sitar Convention in California in 2007. I was dragged screaming and kicking, so to speak, by my friend Karen, who wanted me to go. And I said, I don't want to go to yoga therapy. I like the choreography. I like the fun stuff. I want to work with fit people. But she said, no, you have to go. So I said, okay, let's go. So we went to the yoga therapy conference, and in the middle of it, I had a transformation, an epiphany. A few of the presenters, one of whom was Mukunda Stiles, another was Leslie Kaminoff, had such a profound effect on me that I knew that there was a way towards healing that I didn't know and that I needed to seek it out. So that's when I began my yoga therapy training in 2007 at the Ananda Seva Mission in California. And that's where my eyes were opened to the philosophy and science behind what I thought was yoga. I had some wonderful teachers who opened up my eyes. I began further study. I studied with Mukunda Stiles. I studied with Leslie Kaminoff, and I studied with Nishala Devi. She did Dean Ornish's first yoga therapy program. I studied with Amy Weintraub. I studied with Saraswati Berman. And amazing teachers such as Rajan Narayanan and Dr. Dilip Sarkar of recent. And that's where I am today. I am now a yoga therapist. I have my business is in my studio at 7511 Autumn Hill Drive in West Bloomfield, but I also conduct classes at the Sports Club of Novi. I teach 8 classes a week there, and hopefully some of my students will call in and give their experiences, because they saw me teaching. I taught them before my yoga therapy training and after, and many of them can attest to the difference in how I teach now as opposed to how I taught then, and what they have received as benefits. So hopefully they will be calling in a few minutes to discuss that. In the meantime, I'd like to read something that I was given by my teacher, Saraswati Berman. It was written by Jeff Wright from Dubuque Yoga in 2000. And it basically explains what has happened to yoga and why things are about to change. This was written by Jeff Wright. I once saw a film set in traditional village Africa. The villagers seemed to enjoy a stable, fulfilling life, but had only the most rudimentary technology. One day, a boy received a long-awaited mail-order bicycle. It was the only bicycle in the village. It was beautiful, shiny, bright red, and chrome, and it carried its happy owner quickly and smoothly over all the countryside. Unfortunately, within a short time, it was stolen by someone from another village who sold it for a small amount of money. The bicycle then rapidly passed through a number of owners who did not understand the real value of the bike or how to care for it properly. Before long, it was quite battered and was finally dismantled. A fender became an irrigation spout. One wheel became a part of a crude corn grinder. The other wheel part of the pulley system of a well. These were good people, for the most part, cared deeply for one another. We should not dismiss them for their ignorance about fine material possessions. In a similar way, yoga came to America from India. It was a brilliant, sophisticated system by which one could increase one's wisdom and one's capacity to love others. American culture, though strong in the miracles of technology and the maintenance of material items, had no knowledge of the value and care of such a fragile, complicated, exquisite inward system. Like the bike, yoga was stolen and sold many times within a short time, soon battered and missing important pieces, then dismantled. And some pieces were sold at a great price to the lonely and alienated. Some pieces were sold to dieters or as aphrodisiacs. Some parts are enchanting costumes, house decorations, and conversation pieces. And much became raw material for comedians and cartoonists. But I believe we are good people and a clever people. We should not be dismissed for our ignorance of the inward direction. And this brings us to yoga today in the West. And what we see in the West is we see a lot of vinyasa classes where the teacher is calling out different postures. And if you don't know the posture, you have to look around the room to find somebody else who's doing it, who may or may not be doing it correctly, but it doesn't matter because the teacher says, doesn't matter what your alignment is, just get into the basic shape of the posture. Unfortunately, yoga only works, asana only works when the body is in alignment. So if the alignment is not inherent in the class, then the people participating in the class are bringing in their bad habits and perpetuating those bad habits. For instance, when you are told to tuck your tailbone under by the teacher, who may not realize that that weakens the lumbar spine, if you do that, you're just accentuating a curve of the spine that you've had since the beginning, the primary curve. However, human beings have four curves of their spine. That's what separates us from all other animals. We have a lumbar curve. That lumbar curve, I believe, is directly related to our intelligence because if you compress your spine, how can the information pass easily through the system? So alignment in the postures is key, and those of students out there who have been taking my classes will attest to how they have changed, how their bodies and their minds have changed just by simply lifting up their sternum and allowing the natural four curves of their spine to come into alignment. In fact, Iyengar, BKS Iyengar, one of the great teachers of yoga in this, he just passed away, but in this 21st century, said, find Tadasana in all postures, which means find the alignment of the spine so that the prana, the life force, can flow through the channels, the nadis, keeping the information clear for the organs so that they receive the correct information and stay healthy and balanced. So at this moment, I would like to open up the phone lines for anybody who might have something to say about their experience in yoga. Maybe one of my students might call in, maybe even my cohort in the Yoga Therapy 2020 initiative, Dr. Marsha Billis. Hopefully she'll be calling in shortly. So we can discuss what we're doing, what's happening in yoga today, what is happening internationally, how yoga is becoming very prominent, how the research over the last 100 years has finally manifested into studies, thousands of studies that are on the internet, on the PubMed library, and how these studies are supporting the practices of yoga and the healing benefits, but we now have a way of measuring those benefits with measured yoga therapy and the electrophotonic imaging. So, Courtney, are you there?
We do not have any questions at this time, but we have a lot of listeners out there right now. We have many, many callers who are listening. So if you do have a question for Susanna, please call in at 646-378-0378. Or for those of you who are listening in chat, I can see you guys, and we have lots of listeners in there. Please type your question in chat, and I'm sure Susanna would be more than willing to answer it.
So since nobody is calling in, I'll guess I continue talking about what's up, what's where we are. Well, back in December of 2014, we are on the cusp of change. Narendra Modi, the new Prime Minister of India, stood before the UN and had International Day of Yoga declared for June 21st, 2014. It was monumental, and the majority of the countries all voted very quickly for that to pass that measure. It didn't even have to go to committee. So this basically is ushering in a worldwide view of what yoga is. We have now discovered how profound yoga is. So let me talk a little bit about yoga itself. Yoga means union. Union of the body, mind, spirit with source. What it means is that when the mind is calm and quiet and the thought waves have ceased, then we can connect to the highest source of love and healing in the universe, and profound things happen. In fact, meditation leads to yoga. Meditation is a guide to the divine. And since I have time, I will begin to discuss the Sankhya philosophy upon which the yoga philosophy is based. Ayurveda, which is the science of life, also to the Sankhya philosophy. The Sankhya philosophy is about the principles of manifestation. And the 25, or sometimes they refer to 26 principles, if they include Purusha, or consciousness, as being the first principle. So let me begin by speaking about pre-manifestation, pre-Big Bang, and how the universe was embedded, so it was so small, it was the size of a pin dot. The scientists are all saying that the universe that we now experience, this vast universe, began as a singulate. From the yoga philosophy perspective, that singulate was comprised of Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha is the male, Prakriti is the female. Purusha is intelligence, Prakriti is the wherewithal, the doer, the taker, the mover of the intelligence, the manifester of things from the intelligence. So they were in equilibrium. Nothing was happening. The qualities of Prakriti, our perception, movement, and form. These three gunas, or principles, or qualities, were in perfect equilibrium in the pre-manifested world. However, being so closely embedded must have been agitating. Consciousness was aware that it wasn't very comfortable. And that out of that came a thought wave. Thoughts become things. So the first cause of the universe was a vibration, a thought wave, what we call a vritti. So a vritti arose. This vritti was to be. And that vritti destabilized the equilibrium of sattva, rajas, and tamas. And that was the Big Bang. So now the first principle out of Purusha is Prakriti. Prakriti is the womb of the universe. The first thing Prakriti does is she makes or manifests the second principle, which is Mahat. Mahat is the blueprint for the universe. It has all of the science, all of the philosophies, all of the roadmaps, everything is in Mahat. Mahat, which means great, is cosmic consciousness. It is able to reflect Purusha, which is pure consciousness, but it can also reflect the material world and manifestation. So Mahat has all the rules, how far the stars are from each other, how far your eyes are from each other, why your bones absorb calcium, and et cetera, how the body works. All of this is in Mahat. So also in Mahat is the Buddhi. The Buddhi is our individual mind, our individual consciousness, our individual intelligence. So the Buddhi needed a place to live. So the first thing that arose out of Mahat, the ego, Ahamkara. Now, Ahamkara means I-ness. In order for us to be an I, we had to have a body. We had to have a mind. So the first thing, the qualities of Rajas, which is movement or action, Rajas moves to Sattva, which is the qualities of pure perception, and it creates the mind, the manas, the organs, the sense organs, also known as the tanmatras, and the organs of action. And I'll be speaking about that in a little bit. At the same time, Rajas moves to tamas. Tamas is the quality of form. It's also the opposite of light. It's dark. It's the opposite of sattva. Sattva is pure perception. Tamas is form. It's density. That's where our physical body came from. The five elements come from tamas. The space, air, fire, water, and earth. And it just so happens that these five elements are also equated to the five chakras, the five lowest chakras. These are wheels of light that exist in each and every one of us. And when all of these wheels of light are connected, then we are able to reach higher levels of consciousness and hopefully reflect pure consciousness and receive the love and healing benefits of pure consciousness. So the five elements starts with space. Space was created with the Big Bang. Sound created space. And in that space, there were particles that moved past each other that created wind, touch, air. And in that air, the particles moved against each other and created friction, which created fire. And in that fire, whatever moisture was in the atmosphere created water. And water took all the particles, clumped them together, forming earth. So just as the universe is all five elements, we are all five elements. And from our five elements arises the doshas. But I'm going to leave the dosha discussion for an upcoming radio show. We'll talk about that next time. So you guys will probably have some homework to do. I'll ask you to do some homework so we can discuss your doshas and maybe what kind, what quality of dosha, what kind, what quality of space you are, or air, or fire, or water, or earth. And now also I'd like to bring in Ayurveda a little bit. And Ayurveda is a science of life of which is said to be the dual side of yoga. Yoga is the mastery of the mind. Ayurveda is the mastery of the body and the five elements of the body. They work together to create balance and harmony in body, mind, and spirit. Those of you who would like more information on a personal level, if you would like a private consultation, you can call me at 248-507-4008, or you can email me or contact me through the website www.yogatherapy-om.com. You can get information about our new Measured Yoga Therapy Club. You can get information about the 200-hour yoga teacher training, yoga instructor training, the 300-hour yoga teacher training, the Measured Yoga Therapy training, which is what I'd like to speak to you about right now. We just came off of a 2-week training at my studio with Dr. Rajan Narayanan, who came from Washington, D.C. Dr. Narayanan is the co-founder of Life and Yoga Institute. Life and Yoga Institute is the only institute that provides continuing medical education credits for the American Medical Association. They are accredited by the ACCME, which is the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education Credits, which is comprised of all the state licensing boards for medical doctors, hospital corporation, medical colleges. There are 7 organizations that form the ACCME. And at a recent conference of the ACCME, Dr. Narayanan was there, they actually came up to him and said, "We like what you're doing." So what is Dr. Narayanan doing besides providing continuing medical education credits for doctors so that they can understand the power of yoga and yoga therapy and how we intend to bring yoga therapy into the Western medical model with the Yoga Therapy 2020 initiative? So Dr. Narayanan is involved with organizing all of the research bodies in the world. They came together and decided what should be taught, what should yoga instructors know, what should yoga teachers know, what should yoga therapists know. And they created standards, the first standards in the world for yoga accreditation. Right now we have Yoga Alliance, which is a registry. It registers the number of yoga credits or yoga hours you spent with a teacher. If you had a 200-hour course, then yoga therapy, then you would be a yoga teacher at the 200 level. If you took a 300-hour course, you'd be a yoga teacher or yoga instructor at the 300-hour level. And if you took 500 or 1,000 hours or more, then you would begin your practice of becoming a yoga therapist. The difference is that your classes are registered, but there is no accreditation. There is no exam. The exam exists with the Council for Yoga Accreditation International, which was established by several worldwide research yoga research institutions. So they have set the standards, and there is a test coming up in February for accreditation. And the purpose of providing accreditation is so we raise the standard of yoga in the West so that we can put it back together how it was intended, not how it's being taught today. How it's being taught today is more of a physical activity, a gym activity. In fact, many people look at it, instead of going out to the gym and running, I'm going to a vinyasa class. So they're not getting the full benefit. Just as that bicycle was dismantled, same thing with yoga. Yoga was dismantled, and all we seem to be getting out there is the physical practice. Sometimes we might have a teacher who does some other things, teaches us some breath practices, and sometimes maybe even some mantras. But for the most part, what you're getting is the physical side of yoga and often not the alignment. So inherent in a yoga instructor course or yoga teacher training course is alignment all the time, not just somebody coming in for a weekend and saying, this is what yoga anatomy is. Yoga anatomy should be in every single class. In fact, every class that I teach, it's always alignment-based. And there's a reason for that. As I said before, if the nadis are not open and lined up, how can the prana flow and keep the communication between the organs? How does the pancreas know what to do if there's a lack of energy to the pancreas? How does the diaphragm know what to do? How does the lower back know what to do if you're sitting with your back rounded all the time? We are very fortunate to be living in 2015 and to see the culmination of three very important pieces. The first piece is the history and philosophy and science of yoga over the last 100 years by the research institutions SVIAS Institute and Kavalyadam Institute, and most recently Harvard published a study that said yoga and meditation alters your DNA. So the reason that is because it affects how the DNA strand winds around when it replicates from DNA to RNA. Stress will tighten the strands of DNA so that they do not replicate correctly, whereas yoga practices de-stress the body so that the DNA can replicate properly. And this has been validated at several studies. You can find them, in fact, on my website, www.yogatherapy-om.com. There's a presentation that I delivered at Wayne State Medical School a couple of weeks ago that has some of the studies written there. So if you want to look on my website, some of the studies, and you can also go to PubMed Library to find the studies that are being done on yoga therapy. But this is more of an after the fact. The second pillar is the pillar of acupuncture and the meridians. In the 1990s, in North Korea, Dr. Kim Bohan discovered that if he applied a blue dye to fascia tissue, you could see the honeycomb shapes of the marma points, or the acupuncture points, or the acupressure points. In yoga, we call them marma points. So he proved that the meridian system that was perceived through meditation thousands of years ago and forms the basis of acupuncture, he proved that they exist as physical structures. Research on top of that came with Dr. Kwang Sup-so from South Korea, who took that knowledge and said, okay, let me follow this, and he discovered them also. And he named it the primal vascular system. It is a physical structure. He also discovered in this primal vascular system that cancer cells exist. So not only do we have meridians that exist, i.e. nadis in the Indian tradition, or the yoga tradition we call nadis, but also that they not only do they exist, but cancer stem cells can be found in that. So yoga must have a positive effect on cancer if we can get to the primal vascular system through the next piece that I'm going to speak about, which is measured yoga therapy. In the 30s, Dr. Semyon Kirilian, a Russian physicist, discovered accidentally that he took a picture of himself and there was an electroplate that was attached to electricity, and he was touching it, and it took a picture of him, and it created an image of his aura, of the gas emissions coming off of his body. Some 40 years later, in Russia, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, a biophysicist at St. Petersburg University in Moscow, went further and took this Kirilian photography, and he put it into a camera box. There's a box that has a titanium magnet, and it has a little camera in there and a glass plate. And this electrophotonic imaging device can take a picture of each of your fingers, which has already been correlated to the meridians and the organ systems, and it can tell us in the moment what is the communication between the outside world and your individual cells and your organs. And if there is good energy flow or not. And we can tell in an instant if a yoga practice is the right one for you at that moment or if something else might be more beneficial. And I'm just going to give an example. Over the last couple of weeks, we had many people coming in to be tested with the electrophotonic imaging device. And what we found is many times pain did not have a physical source, meaning you could do all the physical therapy you wanted and do all the yoga asana you wanted, and it still may not change effect on your pain, especially if the pain was energetic. The communication system in the body not correct. Not that some bone was out of alignment or that muscle was pulled, but that the subtle energies were not flowing properly. So in one instance, we had somebody who had migraine headaches for decades. She would get headaches twice a week, and she would take Inotrex, and it would go away temporarily, but a couple days later it would be back. So it really only was palliative. Through the electrophotonic imaging device, we're able to see where she had miscommunication and which of the handful of yoga practices right there that we can do right sitting in a chair, don't even need a yoga mat, don't even need the floor, but something sitting in a chair that she could do to change the communication so that she could get rid of the pain in her neck, her headache. And it turns out that her remedy were the bija mantras. The bija mantras are the sound at each chakra. Remember I said before that each chakra was related to an element? So each of these elements, if there's a miscommunication somewhere, then the chakra would be out of balance. And we see this in the electrophotonic imaging. We can tell if your chakras are in balance, if they're out of balance, if they're moved too far to the emotional side, if they're moved too far to the physical side. So each chakra has a certain vibration. And when you say a specific sound for each chakra and repeat it several times, it begins to change the energy and the communication. And what we discovered, she was able to, within 20 minutes, her headache went away. And in speaking with her over the next week, she said her headache didn't come back, but when she felt some of the tension maybe coming back, because after all, we are living in this world, she said as soon as she began now practicing the bija mantras, the seed sounds for each chakra, her headache stayed away. So she will be coming back on a weekly basis over the next several weeks to measure, to see if these changes have maintained themselves so that she can use that as a remedy. She won't have to take Advil or any of the more powerful migraine medications. She can use her mantra, her bija mantra sound anytime she wishes and take care of her pain and discomfort. In another situation, we had somebody who had pain, and her pain was also energetic, but she had low vitality. And so we gave her a breath practice that raised her vitality, and her pain went away. Because by raising her vitality, she was able to improve the communication between the body parts that were not getting the information, and her pain went away. And with regular practice, daily practice, you can continue moving towards pain-free and healing. And this is why yoga is the ultimate body, mind, spirit guide. It's very clear from the Yoga Sutras, the eightfold limbs, to measured yoga therapy, we do have a guidebook to go by. So when people say we were born into the world, we don't have a guidebook, we just kind of have to wing it. Guess what? We have a guidebook. The Yoga Sutras, which are said to be erroneously written somewhere between 2000 BC and 2000 AD, which should be corrected because Vyasa, who wrote a treatise on the Mahabharata War, also wrote a commentary on the Yoga Sutras, which the Mahabharata War occurred thousands of years before 200 AD or 200 BC. So we know that the Yoga Sutras were actually written way, way, way long time ago, not well before 200 BC or 200 AD, by Patanjali. And what the Yoga Sutras are, in which all yoga philosophies pretty much agree, is the foundation. It's the eight limbs of how to live your life, how to reach back into the highest consciousness principle as spoken about in the Sankhya philosophy. The eight limbs being the yamas, how we conduct ourselves, the niyamas, what ethical disciplines do we adhere to, asanas, what postures we might do to strengthen, to align the spine for the flow of prana through the nadis, what breath practices we might do to facilitate the balancing of the spirit, the body, mind, spirit. How do we withdraw and quiet our mind, pratyahara? How do we build concentration in the mind so that we can move ourselves towards one-pointed focus? Because it's through one-pointed focus, which is also mindfulness meditation, is one-pointed focus. It still keeps us in the physical realm, which means it's not the highest form of meditation, but it is a wonderful starting point for most of us who have very erratic minds, who are going all day between I like, I don't like, which is what the mind does, creating all sorts of vrittis or vibrations. And once we have been able to train our mind towards one pointed focus or ekagata, then we can begin to control or master the mind, so much so that we can quiet all the thought waves. If anybody wants to see that in real time, or see that, they can go on YouTube and look up Ken Wilber. Ken Wilber has a little YouTube video showing, and within a minute you can see him quieting all his thought waves. I had a discussion with my husband's cousin. He says, I don't believe it. I don't believe that you can have no brain waves. And I said, go look online. It's been well established that just because you have no brain activity does not mean you're dead. As a matter of fact, if you're fully alive and conscious, but super conscious, connected to what Rajan calls the cosmic server, then you are directly downloading all of the healing programs that you need to keep you healthy. So finally, after you've mastered your mind and you're able to control your thought waves, you are now have reached a state of bliss, samadhi. And there are actually four levels of samadhi, and the highest level of samadhi is the union of the individual self with the universal self. And this is what yoga is. And that is why yoga and meditation is the ultimate body, mind, spirit guide. With that, I would like to take you through a breath practice.
Susie, hello.
Yes. Hi, Courtney.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know we do have a caller with a question.
Okay.
So whenever you're ready to take it.
I'm ready.
All right, so I would like to welcome to the show Jane, and Jane's calling from Novi, Michigan. Welcome to the show, Jane.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, Susie. I so enjoy practicing with you, and I just had a question, about the seven different things about your practice and how long, and do you think it takes the average person, and is this a possible achievement for them, and in terms of their practice? What was your experience with people reaching this and in their practice, like the concentration, and all those different things?
Well, I would say it probably will take about 2 years of regular practice before you can really experience the higher levels of consciousness. And actually, it could take much more than that, depending on what your life is like. if you get ill for some reason, obviously that interferes with your practice. So quieting the mind can be done all day, any day, any time. The best time to begin a quieting of the mind meditation practice, the best time of the day actually, is 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I just realized this. I read it, and I questioned a famed guru, very famous guru. He doesn't speak. He writes on a chalkboard. I visited him in California, and I asked him the question because I was read conflicting information about when is the best time to meditate. Because in one book, David Frawley says the best time to meditate is in the afternoon at 12 o'clock. And I read in Nishala Devi's book that the best time to meditate is between 4 and 6 in the morning and 4 and 6 in the afternoon. Dr. Rajan Narayanan, who is an adept, he's a highly evolved spiritual person, said the most potent time to meditate to get that consciousness healing is at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, where the sun is at the highest, where the energy is at the highest.
Mm.
So that's the beginning. So in terms of physical practices, you could learn in a very short time how to align the spine to get the benefit, as you have seen yourself.
Absolutely.
So, do you have anything
else?
All
right, that's great. I mean, especially giving like a starting point for somebody who's just beginning this, really get involved in this kind of practice.
It can begin just sitting in a chair, facing east, closing your eyes, observing your breath. What I'd like to put out there is, I don't know how this is going to work, but if people would send a picture to me, I could send it to Rajan, and he could actually give them the mantra. And the reason why it's important to have a mantra is because each of us has our own vibration.
Hmm.
And we need to cancel that vibration in order for us to, we need to quiet it. We need an equal and opposite vibration to cancel our vibration so that we can open up our consciousness to higher consciousness. So he since he is an adept, he's been meditating for 30, 40 years already, and that's what happens. The more you meditate, the easier it is for you to go to the highest realms of consciousness, and what he calls it, download the programs, the healing programs. He looks at consciousness as being a cosmic server, and we are all distributed PCs, and that we have a wireless modem, and at night when we go to sleep, when we go to deep sleep, we are downloading our programs that heal us and getting rid of the programs that don't. So this is why sleep is so very important, one of the major...
Well, thank you so much. It's just a great place for me to start, especially, thinking about scheduling a time to really consciously, keep your mind, free your mind and focus.
Yes.
And meditate.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Anybody else out there? Okay.
No, you're good.
So that takes me to how I'm going to close the show. Before I do, I'd like to make some announcements. That if you look at my website, you'll see that we have the 200-hour yoga instructor program coming up starting this actual weekend. We're doing the Ashtanga segment, the primary series of Ashtanga, and we'll be focusing on the alignment and the anatomy in the Ashtanga series. And then after that, we'll be going into the choreography, and after that, we'll be going into structural foundations of yoga therapy and the Ayurvedic foundations of yoga therapy. Then we'll be going into the yoga therapy practices and the structural yoga therapy practices. And then the final piece would be the measured yoga therapy training. So the easiest way to calm your mind right away is to just close your eyes and just breathe through your nose. If you can't breathe through your nose for some reason, you can actually sniff combination of tea tree or tea tree and lavender. You don't want to put it too close to your nostril because it might, the fumes could actually burn the skin. So you want to keep it far enough away. You could also take tea tree and lavender and blend it together with a carrier oil and just put it in around your nose, and that'll help to open up the nasal passage. So let's begin just by closing your eyes and breathing through your nose. You can place your hands on your low belly and just observe the rise and fall of your belly beneath your hands as you breathe in and out your nostrils. Allow your breath to be soft and subtle, slowly filling from the bottom of the lungs to the middle of the lungs to the top of the lungs. You may even notice your shoulder blades or your clavicle coming up as you exhale from the top to the middle and down. Inhaling from the bottom to the middle to the top. Exhaling from the top to the middle to the bottom. Inhale up. Exhale down. Inhale up. Exhale down. Inhale up. Exhale down. Inhale up. Exhale down. Just sit here for a moment observing your breath. Continue the long, slow inhalation and exhalation. Being the witness, being the Purusha, the observer, observing any sensations that arise, noticing the sensations, yet not reacting to the sensations. Reaction disturbs the mind. So see if you can keep your mind focused on the rise and expansion of the diaphragm, the lower ribs, the middle rib, the upper rib, the clavicle, and all the way down. In the clavicle, to the upper ribs, the middle ribs, the lower ribs. Just like that. And as you continue with this long, slow breathing, we're going to change the breath to a deeper aspirant sound. Actually, this affects the vagus nerve and the fight, flight, and restoration of the body, namely sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system moves us into action, gets us out of danger quickly. It's our startling nervous system. And then we have the restorative aspect, the parasympathetic, which brings everything back into balance. Unfortunately, in this day and age, many of us are walking around in the heightened state, always in a sympathetic nervous system. Maybe we're tight in our chest or our belly, and we walk around all day like that chronically until one day we get exhausted. So continue. Long, slow, deep breath. As we begin to change the breath to Ujjayi Pranayama, the victorious breath. We all know how to do it once we're told. So imagine that you have a cake in front of you, and if you were to blow out the candles of the cake, the first thing you would do would go, take a deep breath, and you can feel the muscles in the back of your throat constrict. So that same inhale, that you would take in if you're going to blow out the candles of your cake, if you did that with your mouth closed, it constricts the muscles in the back of the throat, and that creates the inhalation sound of the Ujjayi Pranayama. On the exhale, if you were going to clean your glasses, you'd go, so if you did that, but your mouth was closed, that would be the exhalation of the Ujjayi Pranayama. So even using the sound, as you breathe in, ha, as you breathe out, begin to calm the nervous system, by balancing the sympathetic with the parasympathetic. Inhale sounds like ah. Exhale sounds like ha. Inhale, sound like ah. Exhale, ha. Two more just like that. Inhale, ah. Exhale, ha. Inhale, ah. Exhale, ha. You can practice the Ujjayi Pranayama in your car, in yoga postures, in your bed, before you get out of bed, before you go to sleep. Recently, it's been discovered that this Ujjayi Pranayama has an effect on your thyroid, balancing the thyroid. We're going to be studying that further with the measured yoga therapy. So those of you that are interested in learning more about my yoga classes that I teach at the Sports Club of Novi. You can call the Sports Club of Novi and get the schedule. You can also go online and get the schedule of my classes. If you're interested in private consultation, you can call my website or click on my website, www.yogatherapy-om.com. You can call me, 248-507-4008. I look forward to speaking and hearing and working with you. Namaste.